If you negotiate with your knee before standing up, you're losing that argument. Joint Relief Institute treats joint pain fast. And yes, it's covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000 as in zero pain.
In the headlines, Dr. Fauci says this drug shows promise. Remdesivir helped ill patients recover faster during the trial. It's one of the things we want to talk to Dr. Eileen Marty about this morning. She is the professor at Florida International University, infectious disease specialist. Good morning, Dr. Marty. And first up, I guess we need to know what your experience is with remdesivir. What do you think?
Well, you know, I haven't been part of the clinical trial, so we only had two patients that we were able to try remdesivir on under compassionate use circumstance. So very limited experience on my part, but there was improvement, and that's not, again, that's too anecdotal to use. But let's look at the actual studies that have been done, and there's several different trials going on, not just the one that you heard about with NIH. There's, you know, as you probably know, there's a trial that was sort of inconclusive about remdesivir that was done in China. But this trial that NIH did is very interesting because it includes 69 sites, including the original site, which was, you know, we first tried it on one of the victims of COVID from the Diamond Princess in Nebraska. And now there's 68 other sites that joined, 47 of them in the United States and 21 countries in Europe and Asia. So it's a huge study. And the data from the study is promising. It's not something that we can say, oh, this is absolutely a cure. It's something everybody can use. It's not that case, because one thing you have to know, Bob, is that this is not a drug that you take orally. We have to give it to you by IV. So it's really a medication for hospitalized patients. But it's an indicator, this trial, this preliminary data from this trial, that this might actually be of significant value for these patients.
So as I understand it, it would reduce the time it takes to recover. Is that it?
That's right, Bob. So it had about a 31% faster time to recover among the patients who did receive remdesivir compared to the people who received placebo, and it was a statistically significant difference. We talk about p-values. So it had a very nice low p-value, which means it's significant based on the numbers of people that we gave remdesivir versus placebo to. And specifically, so we went from an average time of about 15 days in the ICU to an average time of 11 days in the ICU. And that's significant, because every single day that you're in the ICU, other complications can happen. Not only that, you're using up an ICU bed, which means we can't add more people. So it increases the number of ICU beds that the hospital system needs to maintain people alive and hopefully recover. Another benefit from this drug, Bob, was that there's a difference in the mortality rate among the group that did get the remdesivir. So it's still not zero, mind you. I mean, there was still 8% mortality even among the people who received remdesivir. But that's good compared to almost 12%, 11.6 actually, percent of those who did not receive remdesivir. So those are significant differences, using this drug versus not using this drug.
What do you and your colleagues think about the administration's program now, Operation Warp Speed, they're calling it, to try to pull together pharmaceutical companies and various agencies to try to cut the development time for a vaccine? Can this be done? Is this realistic? I know when we've talked before, you were talking beyond a year or 18 months to possibly years before we get the vaccine. What's the latest on that?
Well, one of the promising things that's happening with the vaccines is, remember that, you know, you and I have spoken before about some of the really cool new technology that exists, such as CRISPR technology, and our ability to make what we call chimeric agents. And some of the newer vaccines that are being made and that are very effective, like the Ebola vaccine that's working so well, is one of these chimeric things. And a chimeric thing is when you combine two creatures to create something new, like the Sphinx, in front of the pyramids, right? That's, you got the body of a lion and all these other kind of animals attached with wings and what have you. So what looks very promising, in fact, there's a vaccine that was developed at Oxford, and this Oxford vaccine is exactly that. It's one of these chimeric, where they use chimp adenovirus, and on top of that chimp adenovirus, they integrated the genes of the SARS-2 virus, the COVID virus, and put it on the surface of this chimp adenovirus. So the chimp adenovirus doesn't hurt humans at all. And having these COVID spikes doesn't benefit that virus at all. But it does educate the immune system about the spikes of COVID-19. And I wasn't terribly hopeful about that when I first heard about the study over a month ago, because I was concerned that about what part of the spike protein was being revealed to the immune system. Because you and I have talked about antibody-dependent enhancement, which is a real problem with spike protein. But it turns out that they gave some of this vaccine from Oxford to Rocky Mountain Lab that we have in Montana, which is part of the NIH. And there they have a biosafety level 3 and 4 lab where they could actually inject monkeys, rhesus monkeys, with this vaccine. And so I think you and I have also spoken about the fact that there are a number of animals that have the same lock mechanism, the same entryway into cells that we do. And we talked about cats, and we talked about ferrets, and now monkeys, of course, have very similar ACE2 receptors to humans. So we knew that these animals could get sick from COVID. So the next thing that happened was that the vaccine was given to these animals, and they didn't apparently get any bad effects from having this chimeric vaccine. And then about 29 days ago, they injected these animals that had this chimeric vaccine with the live virus. They exposed them to the SARS-2 virus of COVID-19. And after all these days, the animals have not become sick, and there's no increased risk shown. So that's really very, very promising. I mean, it's still early data because the monkey's immune system, while it's the most similar to ours of all the other animals on the planet, it's still not identical. There are some distinctive differences between their immune system and our immune system. So the next step then is, that's promising. Let's go ahead and try giving humans this chimeric virus, this vaccine, and see if it's safe. That's the next thing we're going to do, is let's see if it's safe in humans. Obviously, we can't challenge humans with the live virus, just like we can challenge monkeys. But at least, it's the next step in the whole process of seeing if we can get a vaccine that might actually work.
And I know you're advising various government officials about things like how to open restaurants again. What are you telling these folks as far as what restaurants will need to do when they do open?
Oh, my goodness, Bob. I was up till 2:30 in the morning going over that data last night, because we have to be excruciatingly careful. There's a lot of attention to, obviously, the key elements that we know keep this virus from jumping from one human to another. And those are things like your social distancing and your hygiene and, so what are the social distancing rules that we're using? We're combining information from the studies that have been done on how this virus is spreading. We're looking at using very special filtration systems in restaurants. We're distancing the tables. We're looking at, and we're going to do actual risk assessments. But in the final analysis, the fact that we're asking every patron to come in wearing a mask, to use the mask whenever they are away from their particular table to which they've been assigned, the hygiene that we're asking them to do at the door when they come in and at the table before they eat and after they eat, all these little details, we're trying to match the science. But it's still an experiment, Bob. Once we open these places up, and even if everyone follows the rules, we're going to have to be very, very vigilant to see whether there's an increased number of people showing up in hospitals sick from COVID, or whether the measures that we're trying to put into place will work. And then there's the economic feasibility of asking restaurants to do all these additional measures. Can they operate? These are the restaurants often work at a margin. Can they operate and succeed when they have to have half the number of patrons that they normally did? When bars cannot be used as bars, at least not in phase one, mm-hmm. And so on and on and on. There's all these details.
Well, wish we had more time. I do get the feeling, though, if I took one of your courses, Professor, at FIU, I'd flunk. I don't know why I think that, but I appreciate it, as always, Dr. Eileen Vardy, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Pleasure, Bob. Take care.
You too.